Support for the show comes from Mercury. Startups, you don't need to settle for cumbersome banking experiences to protect your money. Mercury offers banking and credit cards with an effortless experience, giving ambitious companies greater precision, control, and focus without compromising security. Open smarter checking and saving accounts, control spend, optimize cash flow, and close the books in record time. Visit Mercury.com to join more than 100,000 startups that trust Mercury with their finances and to help them perform at their highest level.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to the Prop G Pod's Office Hours. This is the part of the show where we answer your questions about business, big tech, entrepreneurship, and whatever else is on your mind. If you'd like to submit a question, please email a voice recording to officehours@propgmedia.com. Again, that's officehours@propgmedia.com. First question.
Hi, Scott. My name is Melissa in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I'm a four-time CMO in B2B SaaS with 30 years of experience and many startups. I saw your recent post about the probability a startup will be successful by the number of attempts. I've been part of startups that have been very successful and some that have been total flops. One thing I've noticed that is critical to success is the founder CEO. Many founder CEOs are not always strong business operators. They can be great ideators and innovators, but many don't seem self-aware of their shortcomings as operators. What are your thoughts about when a founder CEO needs to step aside to bring in an experienced team of business operators to drive the company's next level of growth? Thank you for considering my question. Love you and love the show.
Well, Melissa from North Carolina, I love you. That's a really nice thing to say. Look, this is a tough one because you're exactly right. Entrepreneurs have role models, as they should, and they look at Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, who are unicorns. They're a rare species, and that is, if you think of a company as an idea is letter A, and then the startup, getting the initial seed funding, hiring and firing a group of people, like hand-to-hand combat for the first 20, 30 people, and that's what you have to do with the first 20 or 30 people, and working around the clock and sharing a vision and being just sort of irrationally passionate and a little bit crazy, if you will. That's kind of A to D or E. And then the company leans in or discovers something that is differentiated and is a real product that's generating more gross income or has positive gross margins. You don't need to be profitable, but when you sell a widget for a buck, it should be at least on a marginal basis, and that is the cost to deliver that incremental consulting engagement or that incremental piece of software or that incremental whatever it is widget, that you have positive gross margin. You say, okay, if I hire enough people here, I can start to scale and I can build an enterprise and maintain some culture and show that this is more than just a practice. So the ones that succeed oftentimes never get to scale, and that is their practice. Typically, a small group of people in the services industry are great at PR or great investment banking or great at a specific product or service. And the people who started the company are selfish and think that they're the real innovators and they don't want to share in the upside of people to scale the company. And so whenever I meet with people that have a great company, 20, 30, 50 people, and they're wondering why they can't scale, I'm like, it's usually because you are too fucking selfish and don't realize that people want to have a nice life like you and you need to give away large chunks of the company. If you want people to act like owners, which is the key early in a company, you have to make them owners. Anyways, back to your question. Most CEOs think they're Steve Jobs or Bill Gates and they can go A to Z. And key part of self-actualization and also success is recognizing, as I did fairly early, quite frankly, as a CEO, that about the time we get a CFO, about the time we have someone in HR, it is time for me to step down as CEO and become kind of the thought leader, the person that is responsible for driving new business. I really enjoy that. Play a big role in strategy. But somebody needs to be Mr. or Mrs. Inside and basically run the company. And I was always a fan of giving them the CEO title. Why? As a founder, my objective was always to build shareholder value and get economic security for me and my family, which is Latin for get rich. And titles are inexpensive. So I was always up for giving away the CEO title. I've never been the CEO of a company when I've left. Typically within 3 to 5 years, I find someone that is outstanding, that I want to retain, and I give them 5, 7, 10, 15% of the company and say, congratulations, you're now the CEO. And this is kind of what I'm responsible for, and this is what you're responsible for. A lot of founders never come to that conclusion. Now, the question is, how do you nudge them to that realization? That's a tough one. A board? I don't know how you tell someone to be more self-actualized and that they have limits on their capabilities, and we'd all be better off if you brought in someone to run this organization that isn't you. It's a difficult one. Typically, that's the kind of conversation a board should have with the founder CEO that used to be very common in the 90s. Essentially, it was thought there are absolutely no founders that are good enough to be CEO. So what happened was a guy like Steve Jobs was immediately assumed to be crazy, and we need to bring in the gray hair old guy from Pepsi, John Sculley, and let him or her run it. Things have changed so dramatically. The pendulum has swung so far to the other side because of the return of Steve Jobs and people like Mark Benioff and Bill Gates that are able to build a company from A to Z and be outstanding CEOs. You should assume if you're the CEO, you are not Bill Gates. You should assume you are not Steve Jobs. I apologize, I don't have a direct answer for how to convince possibly your CEO to step down, but the fact you're thinking that way means you're going to be, or you're probably successful and can kind of gauge whether or not this company has the right stuff to get to the next level. And again, CEOs out there, you know, search your feelings. Are you really the person to get to the letter M? Cash in, recognize how awesome you are. And if you have the ability to bring in somebody who will be outstanding and compliment your skills, by all means, hit that bid. Thanks for the question. Question number two.
Hey, Scott. Big fan of the show and all of your books. I got married recently to my high school sweetheart and gave all my groomsmen the algebra of happiness. Your words of wisdom in this book and beyond truly have changed my life for the better. My question to you relates to your point regarding the myth of balance, specifically between my professional and personal life, and how to achieve success in both domains. For some background, I'm a 25-year-old brand manager at one of the Death Star companies you've alluded to in the past. And life is truly great aboard the Death Star. I'm treated great by my employer, love working here as they're paying for me to also get my MBA at the Kelley School of Business. And I've found success at the company so far, receiving 3 promotions in under 4 years. I have, however, begun to notice much of the senior leadership at my company have been divorced in the past or are actively getting divorced. As someone who sacrificed their first marriage while achieving professional success, what advice could you give me on setting boundaries at work or otherwise to avoid the fate that you and many senior leaders at my company have had with their romantic partners? I've come to the realization that I would prefer to forego professional success if it meant success in my personal relationships. Big fan of the show. Appreciate any advice.
Wow, that's a very thoughtful question. And first off, let's bring this back to me, as we'll do several times during this question. I applied to Indiana to the Kelley School and got rejected. I got into Anderson, the business school at UCLA. I got into Haas, the business school at Berkeley. I applied to like 9 schools. I got into 2. I got rejected by the Kelley School. I saw the movie Breaking Away in the 80s and thought I would like to go to Indiana. I would like kind of a heartland experience. Anyways, I'm sure it was a great school to go to. And congratulations on your success. This is a tough one. This is a tough one. And you need to get a lot of advice from various viewpoints because there is no right way. I mean, I don't know if my way was the right way. It's just my way. The most important thing in your life, and you've identified this, is deep and meaningful relationships. And across those relationships, the most important one is the one with the person you decide to partner with to have children. That is, I have friends who are so successful on every metric, and quite frankly, their life is full of anxiety and disappointment because they don't have a partner in their spouse. Everything's an argument. They don't appreciate each other. They're just not partners. And then I have other friends who aren't nearly as successful, but they have a partner, a real partner in their spouse, and everything burns a little bit brighter. Now, having said that, I think the lubricant in America, unfortunately, to maintaining and fostering great relationships is money. I just think it's so important in today's ecosystem. You're going to want to buy a house. You're not going to want to have, you know, the number one source of divorce. By the way, a lot more women file for divorce than men. And the atmospherics that create tension oftentimes that lead to divorce, people think it's infidelity or a lack of appreciation of each other. No, it's financial strain. Now, you might decide that you're not able, that your partner needs that time and attention and might not be on board with the requisite sacrifice to advance in the type of information economy job you have. Fine. But then collectively, the two of you need to decide that if you're going to get off the fast track, and maybe she's on the fast track too, and you both want off of it, you need to move to a lower cost environment and cut your burn. There is something about people who decide they are going to work to live, not live to work. And they move to a lower cost neighborhood and they coach Little League and they have good jobs, maybe not on the fast track, and they decide that's the life they want. There is nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, I think more younger people are making that decision now than people in my generation. I decided at a very early age that economic security was paramount to me. It caused me a lot of heartache, or my mom a lot of heartache, because we didn't have a lot of money. And then when my mom got sick and I couldn't take care of her, I decided in America, to be rich is to be loved, and I wanted to be loved. So I decided I was going to really make the requisite sacrifice and trade-offs. As it relates to divorce, you need to have a conversation with your spouse around what your expectations are. And if the expectation is that both of you are going to be able to spend more time with each other and at home, then you need to have an honest, sober conversation around the trade-offs there. That's all. It's up to the two of you. What I decided was that I was going to sacrifice a lot of my 20s and 30s. That included it involved a divorce, but quite frankly, it wasn't. I pin it a lot on my professional focus, and that was somewhat of an issue. But I think a lot of it was just I was selfish, and I wasn't a man. I was a boy. I mean, the reality is it was probably an opportunistic infection created by my selfishness, and I blame it on work. But there are a lot of very successful people who work their asses off, who have good marriages, and I don't think there's any reason, should you come to some sort of agreement with your partner around the trade-off and whether or not the trade-off is worth it. But you need to have that honest and open conversation, because you can have it all. You just can't have it all at once. And what is the most important thing in terms of a great partnership? Bringing love, generosity, and kindness to that relationship. And I can hear just by the fact you're thinking about that, that you've got most of that already in the bag. This is a great question. Thanks for the question. We have one quick break before our final question. Stay with us. Support for Prop G comes from Mint Mobile. If you're tired of your pricey phone bill, you could make room for it by cutting out frivolous expenses, your lattes, your gym membership, your favorite streaming service. But that sounds terrible. Another probably better option is switching to a more affordable provider, like Mint Mobile. With Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That includes high-speed 5G data plus unlimited talk and text. And Mint Mobile has great rates whether you're buying for one or for a family. And their family plan starts at just 2 lines. You also don't need to get a new device. When you buy a new Mint Mobile plan, you can use your own phone and keep your phone number and contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/propg. That's mintmobile.com/propg. Cut your wireless bill up to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/propg. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Support for Prop G comes from NerdWallet. You don't have to be a genius to start making better financial decisions today. It's not that sexy, but piling up lots of little monetary victories today can yield some pretty significant rewards down the line. The tricky part is knowing where to start. NerdWallet can help. Their financial experts have helped countless people find ways to maximize every dollar they earn. Now, the team is helping folks get more from every dollar they spend. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering up to 10 times the points on every dollar you charge. Their expert team of nerds do the work reviewing top credit cards so you can trust you have the smartest one for future you. If I had better rewards right now, I'd probably upgrade my hotel at South by Southwest so I could have a big fat party and everyone would be impressed and love me. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Support for the show comes from Grammarly. Sloppy writing can be the death knell to any potential client, investor, or employer. Emails and messages already lack the tone and subtle social cues you need to understand what the person actually means. But when grammar and spelling mistakes enter the picture, it can make it impossible to decipher what anyone's trying to say. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all the wasted time and money that goes with it. But it's more than just a grammar check. Grammarly can help generate AI prompts or even help you strike the right tone and personalize your writing based on audience and context. Here at the Prof G team, we use Grammarly, and all I have to say is it's made us more productive and made our work output just better, higher quality. Plus, Grammarly integrates seamlessly across 500,000 apps and websites. No cutting, no pasting, no context switching. Personalized on-brand writing help is built into your docs, messages, emails, everything. So why not join Grammarly to work faster, hit your goals while keeping your data secure? Learn more at Grammarly.com. Welcome back. Question number three.
Hey, Prof. G. My name is Eli. I'm 19 and a college senior currently living in Manhattan. After growing up in a small community in the rural Midwest, I moved to Manhattan for college, seeking to broaden my view of the world and to lead a more exciting life. And I've been blessed with wonderful friends and experiences here. During college, I've been working remotely as a third-generation member of my family's business, overseeing our marketing and graphic design with an active role in our business strategy and product development. This has been a tremendous responsibility that I have excelled in, and it has provided me with great real-world business and marketing experience. I'm now 11 months away from graduating and facing two different paths forward. First, my father has offered me an opportunity to join the family business full-time and eventually take over ownership of the company. And while I'm not particularly passionate about the business, this would give me instant financial security, likely for the rest of my life. However, this would require me to leave New York and move back to the Midwest, and I don't feel much excitement in returning to a place that I feel I've outgrown in a lot of ways. The other option is to remain in New York and strike out on my own career path. This would allow me to stay near to my church and community of close friends, and I'm also excited about a job that better suits my passions, particularly in the product design and technology space. I have, however, struggled to find many potential opportunities yet, and networking has proven to be a difficult and so far unsuccessful task. There are a lot of trade-offs here, and I feel a pretty strong pull in both directions, but I'd love your input on what questions I need to think about as I consider what the next phase of life looks like. Thanks.
Thanks for the question. This is what you define as a good problem, and that is whether to stay in New York and pursue a career for a number of years or to move back and run or be involved in the family business. This, first off, take stock of your blessings. Secondly, take stock of just how impressive a young man you are. I wasn't thinking this way. When I was 19, like my claim to fame, the only thing I had going for me was I had memorized every key line from Planet of the Apes, and I can make bongs out of household items. That was the beginning and end of my skill set when I was your age. That's how thoughtful I was. So the fact you're even thinking this way means you're an impressive young man. Look, the bottom line is, I think if you have the option to stick in Manhattan and work for a few years, that's what you should do. One, I got to imagine your family would appreciate and understand your desire to stick in Manhattan for a few years. I think you're going to be more successful in your family's company if you have a few years at another company and you get to establish some chops and success at a company that isn't run by people who are relatives. I think you'll have more credibility with the coworkers at your family business if you have a few years under your belt instead of going straight into the family business. It sounds like you're really enjoying yourself in the city. So, and also keep in mind, it's a bit of a one-way street. And that is, once you move home to the Midwest and join the family business, unless it really blows up, you're there for probably the rest of your career. So I think the optionality here dictates, and the credibility you'll get and the life experience, that you should, if you can, stick here. And I also, look, not having a lot of success finding a job, you know, that's called the marketplace. It's never easy, even despite the fact that supposedly, you know, unemployment's at an all-time low. To find a good job in a city as expensive as Manhattan and the kind of the creative industry and what you're doing, I don't know if I call it the creative industry, but it's hard. It's really hard. And that difficulty and that ability to find that job and put up with the bullshit of bosses who don't have the same last name as you, and the lack of financial security and trying to figure out a way to make a living in Manhattan, which is not easy for a young person, and be able to afford to pay your ridiculous rent in some shoebox in Brooklyn, That shit is hard, but here's the thing. You come out of it battle-tested. Being the Marines is hard, but you come out and you're just a warrior. Thanks for the question and best of luck to you. And again, well done. You are so far ahead of the game at 19 to even be thinking about these issues. That's all for this episode. Again, if you'd like to submit a question, please email a voice recording to officehours@propgmedia.com. Again, that's officehours@propgmedia.com. This episode was produced by Caroline Shagrin. Jennifer Sanchez is our associate producer, and Drew Burrows is our technical director. Thank you for listening to the Prop G Pod from the Vox Media Podcast Network. We will catch you on Saturday for No Mercy, No Malice, as read by George Hahn, and on Monday with our weekly market show.